What a wonderful thing. I've enjoyed the wonderful music that we had. But you know, I think as happy a sound as I have heard here has been a baby. Yes! Way to go! Mary, I didn't even realize you were expecting. Now, is that Noah? Is that Noah? Okay, that's Noah. Oh, and there's Elaine. Elaine's holding, so I was going to ask Elaine if that we hadn't realized you were expecting. She's been holding her the most time. Her. You know, nothing more beautiful or wonderful that God has created. My wife's heard me say this many times. The most wonderful thing God has put on this earth, babies. And the second most wonderful thing? Have any of you heard me say this before? Mothers! Mothers! The second most wonderful thing. And where did fathers come in? Somewhere in the top 10 if they're really good. But after mothers comes grandmothers, and then great-grandmothers, and then grandfathers and great-grandfathers. So, some fathers spend too much time looking at the TV and football games while that precious baby's crawling around. But there's some really good fathers, too. So, anyway, thank you for bringing Noah. That's just the happy sound to hear a baby back there making noise during services. That's a great joy. Well, I really appreciated, before services, Ron Walters. Not the sermonette, but I appreciated him before. He just almost made my day. He came up and he said, "What's the title of your sermon?" And I looked at him and I said, "Why are you here?" And he got a startled look on his face. And I just smiled. And after a little while, he said, "That's the title of your sermon." Right. He asked the title of my sermon and I told him. And I just loved his response of shock on his face when I said, "Why are you here?" So now I'm asking you, why are you here? I mean, look at how tiny this group is. And if you put together Living Church of God and Philadelphia Church of God and Restored Church of God and Cogwa and all the other, we are so pitifully small. Smaller than we used to be. And so you can honestly ask, why are you here? Well, normally we turn to Leviticus 23. Leviticus 20, and I'll turn there. And these are covered usually as we go through it. Starting off in verse 1, Leviticus 23, I should wait and allow you to turn. Leviticus 23, verse 1. "And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, The feast of the Lord." He didn't say the feast of the Jews. He didn't say the feast of the children of Israel. Which they are, should be the feast of everybody. But the feast of the Lord, which you shall proclaim to be holy convocations. It's not just the day that is holy. The convocation is holy. Think of that. This little group is in a holy convocation. Convocation is something that's convoked. It's not just an assembly. When you convoke something, it's like a commanded assembly. It's convoked. This is what we're going to have. And God has a holy convocation. Not just convocation, a holy convocation. And it's the feast of the Lord. These are my feast. He didn't say that. These are my feast. Didn't say that. Now they are their feast, but God is claiming ownership of this day. And this, not just this day, this meeting. This meeting. And also for those of you in the camera right there, good to see you. Will you smile? There, okay. Verse 3. 6 days shall work be done, but the seventh day. Now the first one is the Sabbath, which is ignored by most of the world. But the seventh day is a Sabbath of solemn rest, a holy convocation. You shall do no work on it. It is the Sabbath of the Lord in all your dwellings. Then he goes on to the Passover. He says, these are the feasts of the Lord, holy convocations, which you shall proclaim at their appointed times. On the 14th day of the first month at twilight is the Lord's Passover. And on the 15th day of the same month is the Feast of Unleavened. Notice, one is on the 14th. The other is on the 15th. Because not everybody goes by that. Some people keep the Passover on the 15th. Now they kill the lambs, when they used to kill the lambs, on the 14th. But they actually kept the convocation on the 15th, even at the time of Jesus. The time of Jesus, Jesus kept it on the 14th. Now, there have been arguments, I shouldn't say arguments, discussing among if you read commentaries, which I've read a lot about this verse, about why it says this, because it says, and you don't have to turn there, John 18, verse 28 and 29. Here, Jesus had kept the Passover with his disciples. And then, after that evening, they took him captive. And in the morning, they took him to Pilate. But I think you remember, they would not go in the praetorium because they could not really be with the Gentiles. That would defile them. Now, of course, it is not defiling. Thank you. Yes. All right. There's a good daddy right there. There's a daddy in the top 10. He got up to go get his baby. Way to go. I think most men would have said, would have elbowed mom. Way to go. But of course, she loves daddy, right? Yes. Oh. I could just stop services and have the baby come up here and entertain us all. Nothing more wonderful than babies. We're expecting 2 more great grandchildren this year. Wow. Makes me so happy. Well, the problem was they wouldn't go in. Jesus had already kept the Passover at the beginning of the 14th. They had the meal. But the Jews would not go in to the praetorium, and it says in John 18, verse 28, that they themselves did not go into the praetorium unless they should be defiled, but that they might eat the Passover. Now, there have been a lot of discussion about, was this the Passover? Did Jesus keep the Passover a day early because he knew that he wouldn't arrive at the time of the Passover? That's been some suggestions. But then I said, but wait, two of the Gospels say that the disciples came to Jesus and said, "Where were you that we keep the Passover?" And Jesus said, "I've desired to keep this Passover with you." So I thought it had to be that he was keeping the Passover at his usual time. And even to this day, well, some say the Jews were divided at that time between those who were down in Judea and those who were in northern in Galilee, where they were still keeping it on the 14th. But they really don't know. But to this day, the Jews keep it on the 15th, not the 14th. However, there used to be a group of Jews in the Middle Ages. I'm trying to think of the name that they had, if any of you remember, that were keeping it still on the 14th. But then that group died out, and to my knowledge, all the Jews keep it on the 15th. Instead of the day that symbolizes Jesus Christ, whom the majority of Jews rejected and still do. And it says Pilate went out to them because they wouldn't go in. So anyway, continuing down, see, on verse 6, on the 15th day is the Feast of Unleavened Bread to the Lord. 7 days you must eat unleavened bread. Verse 7, on the first day you shall have a holy convocation, that's today. You shall do a customary work on it. Now that is customary. That is, you don't go to your job. But you can prepare a meal like we had last night. Wasn't that wonderful? Well, I really appreciate all the people who did all of that work. I could say all the ladies who did it, but there were a lot of men involved. Not at my house, but because I didn't do anything other than, you know, whatever, go to the grocery store with Renee and she picked out what she wanted, or went to the front door and opened the door and reached down and whatever she had ordered from Amazon, brought it in, opened it up, and gave it to her. So, she prepared it. Thank you very much. It was wonderful. And there were some gentlemen serving, let me tell you. I saw some gentlemen serving. And not me, but it isn't that I'm against it. Just not that good. But anyway, he says you shall do no customary work. That is, you don't do your regular jobs, but you can prepare food. And then, let me just say that this feast, and the next feast that you have is Pentecost. And you see that right here, verse 9. And the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, "Speak to the children of Israel and say to them, when you come into the land which I give you to reap his harvest, you shall bring a sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest." So that's one of the names of what we call Pentecost. Now you don't find Pentecost in the Old Testament. You know why? Anybody? You know why we don't, in the Old Testament it's not called Pentecost? Yes, ma'am. It's a Greek word. That's right. It's a Greek word. In the New Testament, is written in Greek. And Pentecost means 50. And so they counted, Pente means 5. So that's the reason. Good job. Wasn't that beautiful? I don't think I'm the only one who feels that way. A sheaf of the first fruits of your harvest to the priest. So they called it first fruits also. Actually, it had, in the Old Testament, three names besides first fruits. Can anybody think of the other two names in the Old Testament? Even one of them? Weeks. Feast of Weeks. Feast of First Fruits. And there's one other that almost nobody ever uses. Yeah, Feast of... Well, in gathering, that's at the end of the year. Not Pentecost. That's Tabernacles and the ones that's called in gathering, where at the end of the year they gathered. So that is the name of a feast. But actually, in chapter 23 of Exodus, it's called the Feast of Harvest. Feast of Harvest. Notice it says, sheaf of the first fruit of your harvest of the priest. Well, it actually is called Feast of Harvest in Exodus 23. He shall wave the sheaf before the Lord to be accepted on your behalf on the day after the Sabbath, the priest shall wave it. And you shall offer on that day, when you wave the sheaf, a male lamb of the first year without blemish as a burnt offering to the Lord. And let me see, let me drop down to verse 23. And just since we have want to do this in 50 minutes, verse 23. And it says, here's trumpets. Then the Lord spoke to Moses, saying, speak to the children of Israel, saying, on the seventh month, in the first day of the month, you shall have a Sabbath rest, a memorial of blowing of trumpets, a holy convocation. And once again, do no customary work, but you can prepare a meal, or at least whatever is necessary for a nice feast. And then verse 26, the Lord spoke to Moses, also the tenth day of this seventh month shall be the Day of Atonement. It should be a holy convocation for you. So God's plan is laid out in these feasts. First, Jesus, the Passover. It's interesting. I don't know why. God can explain it to us. But Passover is not listed as a holy convocation, a holy day, I should say, where he says, do no work, no customary work. It's not a holy day. And so the next feast, which we're in, has two holy days. The first and last. First and seventh. And then you get to Tabernacles. It's 7 days, but only the first day is a holy day. Then the eighth day. So it's interesting. You've got on either end one day that is a feast. Passover and eighth day. And then just inside of that, 7 day feast, unleavened bread and tabernacles. And then three in between. So, I don't understand everything about that. People make suggestions and guesses about it. But we don't really know completely. Anyway, verse 26, 10th day of the 7th month shall be the Day of Atonement. And he says, you shall do no work. Now, he doesn't say no customary work. No work. Why? Nobody's preparing a meal. It's a fast day. So, it's just like last night. There was a lot of work done putting that meal together. I mean, that was not easy. And then the cleanup afterward. By the way, wasn't that amazing? Those little glass things with the water in them, and this thing's, it's moving. And afterwards, came by with a little carton, little plastic, and said, does anybody want to take that fish home? And I said, we weren't supposed to eat it? And I was told, well, it's probably unclean. Well, you know these. You've been through them. So there's the Day of Atonement. And then down in verse 33, you're going to get to God speaking to Moses again. Speak to the children of Israel, saying, the 15th day of the 7th month shall be the Feast of Tabernacles for 7 days to the Lord. So Jesus Christ begins the whole thing. We need forgiveness. And then we go through these days of unleavened bread where we put sin out of our lives, as it took them 7 days to get out of Egypt. Egypt is symbolic of sin, of this world. And Pharaoh is symbolic of Satan, who is the Pharaoh of this world. And it took them 7 days to finally go through the Red Sea and be delivered from this world. But just like us being delivered from this world by Jesus Christ's sacrifice, and going through the Red Sea is a type of what? Baptism. Gracias, amigo. And yes, we go through the Red Sea of baptism. But are we immediately in God's kingdom in the promised land? No. None of you feel you're in God's kingdom yet. So just like they had to wander through the wilderness to all the old men other than two. Now, by the way, there could have been some of the ladies who went into the promised land. But every other man from 20 and up died in the wilderness except Caleb and Joshua, and did not enter the promised land. Even Moses did not enter into, which pictures as they went through the Jordan, going through to God's kingdom. So we accept Christ, we're baptized, and then we go through life till the old man dies. And we slowly get rid, that's the plan anyway, of the old Fred. The old, what's your name? And then finally, crossing the Jordan in God's kingdom. That's going to be when we die or we're changed at the return of Jesus Christ. Now, Renee and I, we're in our 80s, so we don't know that we're going to be hanging around until Jesus comes. We'll still be in the flesh and changed in a moment, a twinkling of an eye. We actually pray for something God's never promised. We tell Him, we would really like that You would take us some night together, that we would go to bed and wake up in Your kingdom. Now, it'll probably upset the coroner that two people died the same night and don't show any signs of, you know, they'll check our stomachs to see why did these two people die the same night. So we tell him, we know you haven't been with that, but boy, neither one of us want to be left alone again. We've been there, done that, and for those of you who are alone, I'm sorry. Been there, done that. Don't want to do it again. But if God brings that on us, if one of us is left behind, that's, we accept His will. We just have to accept those things. So, anyway, that's the plan of God in the feast. I want to turn to Zechariah 14. Now I said, why are you here? Zechariah 14. Okay, it's been almost half of my sermon. 24 minutes. See, I'm looking. Zechariah 14, verses 1 through 4. The day of the Lord is coming. That's the day we're looking forward to, isn't it? Jesus, our Lord, coming. And your spoil will be divided in your midst, for I will gather all the nations to battle against Jerusalem. The city shall be taken, the houses rifled, and the women ravished. Half of the city shall go into captivity, but the remnant of the people shall not be cut off from the city. This is what happens before He returns. The day of the Lord is coming, but he's not here yet. Verse 3, then the Lord will go forth and fight against those nations as he fights in the day of battle. Verse 4, and in that day his feet will stand on the Mount of Olives, which faces Jerusalem on the east. And the Mount of Olives shall be split in two from east to west, making a very large valley. Half of the mountain shall move toward the north, and half of it toward the south. The Mount of Olives runs as a ridge from north to south on the east side of Jerusalem. I had the opportunity to stand there. Went to the Feast Tabernacles in Jordan, and after the Feast Tabernacles, went into Jerusalem and stood there. And I thought, as I stood there on that mountain, by the way, I picked up a rock. I thought, well, I ought to have a rock to say this came from, this mountain. They're not pretty rocks. I guess they're just limestone. So I haven't kept it. If it were something where I could have found a rock that we could have polished, but couldn't find any. So anyway, it's going to split. It's going to be a beautiful mountain in the sense that Jesus Christ was on it, and it's going to split in two. It's going to be wonderful. And the Mount of Olives shall be split in two from east to west, making a very large valley. Half of the mountain shall move toward the north, because it's a ridge that runs north to south, and half of it toward the south. And then in verse 8 and 9, Zechariah 14, verse 8 and 9, and in that day it shall be that living waters shall flow from Jerusalem. Now here's the reason it splits. Why does God split that mountain? Because he's going to have water come out of Jerusalem. And Jerusalem itself is up on a high area, a big ridge. But half of it will flow to the east and into the Dead Sea, and half to the west into the Mediterranean. It'll have water going both ways. But he has to split that mountain in order for it to come out of the temple and flow down to the Dead Sea. So he's got to make a pathway for it. So, verse 8, we saw living waters shall flow from Jerusalem, half of them toward the eastern sea. That's what is now called the Dead Sea. It won't be dead then. Half of them toward the western sea. That's the Mediterranean. In both summer and winter it shall occur. And the Lord shall be king over all the earth. In that day it shall be the Lord is one and his name one. And then down verse 16 through 19. Zechariah 14, verse 16 through 19, and it shall come to pass that everyone who is left of all the nations which came against Jerusalem shall go up from year to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, and to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. So when Jesus Christ sets up his kingdom, God's feast will be kept eventually by all people. So why are you here? Why isn't everybody? Is this unclear? Verse 17. And it shall be that whichever of the families of the earth do not come up to Jerusalem to worship the King, the Lord of hosts, on them there will be no rain. Well, you know, that's not a real problem in Egypt. They just don't get a lot of rain anyway. They get their water out of the river. So they're sitting there saying, no need for us to go up. We've got water. If the family of Egypt will not come up and enter in, they shall have no rain. If they get no rain, what are they going to do? Well, God's going to reach down and says, all right, yeah, you've got the Nile, you've got water, and you've also got a plague because you have not come up like I told you to. And so he says, they'll receive the plague with which the Lord strikes the nations who do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. This shall be the punishment of Egypt and the punishment of all the nations that do not come up to keep the Feast of Tabernacles. I want to read some verses out of Matthew, starting in Matthew 7, verse 13 and 14. These are verses that just absolutely are so clear and so startling that to most people, they just ignore it. It's like, this can't be. This, surely this is not correct. Right? Surely can't be true. It's just too startling to believe. Matthew 7, verse 13 and 14. Enter by the narrow gate. For wide is the gate, and broad is the way that leads to destruction. And there are many who go in by it. Because narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way which leads to life. Do you find, now I know that if I ask you, is this hard? You'd say, no, I love the feast. But you know, a lot of people have had their marriages break up. They've had their family reject them. They've lost jobs by going the narrow way. Narrow is the gate, and difficult is the way which leads to life. And notice this. How many people who love the Bible really believe this? I'm not knocking them. God hasn't opened their eyes. I mean, that's my grandparents, my parents, my brother, my sister, my nieces and nephews. I gave my aunt, by the way, I don't mean a bug, my Aunt Evelyn, one of the books that back then Radio Church of God was putting out. And she read it. And she said, well, that's interesting if it's true. That was it. I mean, I didn't press it, but I could have said, Aunt Evelyn, it's in the Bible. You just read it in the Bible. Do you believe what the Bible says? I don't blame Aunt Evelyn. She was a precious lady. But I was the only one in my family. Of course, I was, can you believe this? I was the strange one in my family anyway. I was the class clown. But my grandmother thought I was wonderful. She just laughed and laughed. I kept her entertained. And she loved it. She would quote me, well, Fred says, and then she'd laugh. Good for you, Grandma. Think of this. Why are there so few? And there are few who find it. There are few who keep the Passover on the 14th. There are few who keep the first day of unleavened bread. Now, there are some Jews that keep it, but they don't see Jesus in it. Well, some do. Some do. So let me say the majority don't, though. So why, when I say, why are you here? Because God reached down and chose you. That's why you're here. You don't deserve it. You're not better. You're not wiser or smarter than people who are not here. There are people who study the Bible, who teach the Bible, who can read Hebrew, who can read Greek, who can write commentaries, and they don't keep it. It isn't that they are saying, I'm just not going to keep it. They just are blinded. Few who find it. Chapter 15, verse 7 through 9. Matthew 15, verse 7 through 9. How many? You know, I went to several different churches when I was in high school. Why did I choose whichever church I went to? There were cute girls. I don't want to offend you, but let me just say I was a pagan. You know what I'm going to say, don't you? You don't want me to say it, right? No, you didn't. I was a pagan. I worshipped heavenly bodies. Maybe this shouldn't go online. So the only thing doing in the little town, I lived with my grandma my senior year at my request in Little St. Matthews, South Carolina. The only thing, I mean, they rolled up the sidewalks on Sunday, so it wasn't anything doing except Sunday night at the Baptist church. And they had some really cute girls. And we could go there and we could say, and there we were, obviously really nice boys because we came to church, you know. So the girls were not allowed to date. This was 1957 and 58, my senior year. The girls weren't allowed to date on Sunday. But you could go up and say, Mr. So-and-so, may I take his daughter, named the girl, out to Speed's Crossroads for a Coke. And there was a little crossroads where you could go and you could get a Coke or something like that. And of course, I was such a nice boy because there I was at church. And he'd say, and by the way, in St. Matthew's, taking them out for a Coke is about all that did happen. That's all that, I want to say, these were nice girls. I can't say all of them were nice boys, but they were nice girls. And nobody got pregnant. No, nothing like that was going on. Anyway, that's all you'd do is you'd just be able to take this sweet, beautiful girl out to Speed's Crossroads and then take her home. But at least it was better than sitting at home and doing nothing. So there they all were. And so I went to a lot of churches. But none of them taught what we're reading right here. None of them taught this. Few there be that find it. Matthew 15, verse 7 through 9. Hypocrites, well did Isaiah prophesy about you, saying. Now this is them saying, not me. These people draw near to me with their mouth and honor me with their lips, which they did, and I did. I even went to the Catholic Church with Susan Bike. Cute little girl, lived just not too far from me. Cute little Susan Bike invited me and Richard Thornton and his girlfriend to midnight mass. And we went. But look, they were drawing near to God with their mouth. Me too. Honor me with their lips, but their heart is far from me. So just praising, honoring God isn't enough. Because it says in verse 9, now I'm not attacking any of those churches. They didn't ask to be blinded. They didn't ask that. In vain they worship me, teaching as doctrines the commandments of men. Why are you here? Why am I here? Because God didn't call the great and the mighty. He called me and you. Just think of the verse that you all know, Revelation 12, verse 9, where it says, "So the great dragon was cast out, that serpent of old called the devil and Satan, who deceives the whole world." I've been deceived. All of us have been deceived. Even those who grew up in the church, we've been deceived. You have been. I didn't grow up in the church. Deceived in one way or the other. He was cast to the earth. His angels were cast out. Who deceives the whole world? The churches read this. But they're blinders. The great scholars in seminaries who can read that right there in the Greek and who can teach Greek. After all, God is doing this out of mercy. He's letting us learn Satan's way is no good. So he's letting the world burn fingers. Look, when did it start? In the Garden of Eden. Did God not know Satan was there? Of course he knew. He knew every hair on Adam and Eve's head. He knew every thought that they had. And he allowed Satan in the garden because he's letting us taste Satan's way. And the days of unleavened bread are the beginning of deliverance. Where Israel was delivered from Egypt. And it pictures us being delivered from Satan's way. In Matthew 13 and verse 10 through 17, the disciples came and said to him, "Why do you speak to them in parables? You know, I heard a man just the other day." Well, I say I heard. He wrote it online, as I recall. He's a minister. And he said, "How can you get people's attention? Tell them stories." That's what Jesus was doing. All those parables, he was making things clear. He was getting their attention because telling stories is what gets people's attention. And I read this. When they said, "Why'd you speak to them in parables?" And he says in verse 11, he answered and said to them, "Because it has been given to you to know the mysteries of the kingdom of heaven, but to them it has not been given." Not their fault. "For whoever has, to him more will be given. He will have abundance. But whoever does not have, even what he has will be taken away from him. Therefore I speak to them in parables. Because seeing, they do not see." They can read the Bible, see it. "Hearing, they can hear the message. They do not hear, nor do they understand. And in them the prophecy of Isaiah is fulfilled, which says, 'Hearing you will hear and shall not understand, and seeing you will see and not perceive. For the hearts of this people have grown dull, their ears are hard of hearing, and their eyes they have closed. Lest they should see with their eyes and hear with their ears, lest they should understand with their hearts and turn so that I should heal them. But blessed," not because we're smarter, "blessed," not because we're greater, because we're not. "Blessed are your eyes, for they see." Why do you see? You're just blessed. Why are you here? You're blessed. "And your ears, for they hear. For assuredly I say to you, many prophets and righteous men desired to see what you see and did not see it, and to hear what you hear and did not hear it. And in Romans 11, verse 7 and 8, what then? Israel has not obtained what it seeks. They brought offerings. They went to God. But the elect have obtained it. And the rest were blinded. God allowed Satan to blind this whole world. I was blinded. Verse 8, just as it is written, God has given them a spirit of stupor, eyes that they should not see and ears that they should not hear to this very day. So why are you here? Well, got a few more minutes. 1 Corinthians chapter 1. Verse 26 and 29 through 29. For you see your calling, brethren, that not many wise according to the flesh, not many mighty, not many noble are called. But God has chosen the foolish things of the world to put to shame the wise. And God has chosen the weak things of the world to put to shame the things which are mighty. And base things, oh wow, don't we sound good? Foolish things. That's us. Weak things. That's me. To put to shame the things which are mighty. And base things of the world and the things which are despised, God has chosen. And the things which are not, we're basically nothing. To bring to nothing the things that are, that no flesh should glory in His presence. Now I just want to mention again something I've referred to. We don't look down on any church or group or other church of God. Peter said in 1 Peter chapter 2, verse 17, you don't have to turn there. He said, honor all people. Now, we don't honor everything they do. And we don't honor all their attitudes, but it means that we have compassion. That they're deceived. And we have respect. A lot of translations translate this as the Bible in basic English translated, have respect for all, or as the complete Jewish Bible, be respectful to all. It's called complete because it's a Jewish Bible that has a New Testament, which is unusual for a Jewish Bible. And so, what does he say in Romans 11? I do not desire, brethren, Romans 11, verse 25 to 26, I know I'm hurrying. Aren't you glad? For I do not desire, brethren, you should be ignorant of this mystery, lest you should be wise in your own opinion, that blindness in part has happened even to Israel until the fullness of the Gentiles has come in. And so all Israel will be saved. That's a majority thing. And then in Romans 11, verse 32 through 36, for God has committed them all to disobedience, that he might have mercy on all. Oh, the depth of the riches, both of the wisdom and knowledge of God, how unsearchable are his judgments and his ways past finding out. Verse 34, for who has known the mind of the Lord, or who has become his counselor? Verse 35, or who has first given to him and it shall be repaid to him? Chapter 11, verse 36. To God is the glory. For of him and through him and to him are all things. To whom be the glory forever. Amen.